No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIO and the number 1. You know, here at Shadow Politics, we pride ourselves on talking about issues that don't come up enough. And tonight we have a special guest, Karen Owen Lee, who is a gerontologist, an author and lecturer, and she's going to talk to us about the issues surrounding aging. And as the resident old person at Shadow Politics, I'm excited to have this conversation. But first, let me introduce the youngster on the block. Maria, are you there?
I'm here. And it's so funny that you say that, because while we try to talk about diverse subjects as often as possible that affect our listeners and, of course, ourselves, I couldn't be more in the sweet spot with her, because I have parents that are still alive and that are aging and ailing. And that's one of the things, the specialties that Karen has. Yeah. And so while it's not a vanity booking, if you will, I can hardly wait to hear what she has to say.
Yeah, me too. You know, I've certainly had issues. Both my parents died when I was a kid, but I had an elderly aunt I had to take care of, and I put my sister into hospice in the final days of her lives. And these are very, very, very difficult choices. And there's stuff you're not prepared for, right? We don't like to think about this. So,
well, plus your in-laws are getting on, right? Your in-laws,
yeah. My father-in-law is still like the hottest guy in the retirement community, so so I'm not worried about him. But let's bring Karen on.
Perfect.
And find out what she has to say. Karen, well, are you with us?
Hi there, and thank you.
Hi, Karen.
Having me.
Oh,
of course.
Absolutely.
If we could just go a little bit, Karen, before you touch on a couple of topics that are hot buttons, if you will, talk to us about. I mean, you are beautifully poised and positioned to do what you do with your education, with your experience with your own mother educationally, and then with your 30-plus year career. Will you give us an overview about the journey that brought you to this conversation today, July 16th?
I think I need to start with my mother. My mother was a professor of psychology, and she started the first gerontology program. And we lived, it's very interesting, we lived in an area in Pennsylvania that was dominant with the Amish, Mennonite, and Brethren communities or cultures. And we found at the farmer's market, no less, that the Amish, they could be 100 years old and still taking care of their stand. And my mother was very interested in how can that happen? So we traveled internationally and to find out how other cultures did it. And the difference is very interesting, is that the other cultures revered their seniors and Americans don't. So that's the difference that I found early on. And I just love the stories that seniors have to give. So that's why I've been so involved. And it's really my passion to work with seniors and adult children.
So are you suggesting that the way that a society views and honors their elders is also a contributor to their longevity?
Very much so. Very much so.
And what does that say about us Americans?
Well, we just have a different way of taking care, think of things. And the American population, think of it. We have two parents, let's say, and both of them are working outside the house. And they have children, so that's the sandwich generation, and then they have their senior. So it gets very involved, and we're very fast-paced. Mm-hmm. And as we age, we slow down. And unfortunately, that causes a problem for the adult child to take care of or being a caregiver to their parent. And it scares them. The adult child, if I may say, gets scared because they never have had to do it in the past, and now they're confronted with it. And when I say the adult child, I mean from the age of 45 on.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm sorry. I didn't mean to talk over you, Karen. But when has this changed? Because let me tell you, in my life, we would have fought to the death over who got to keep my grandmother in her old age. Now, my grandmother was independent, so she kept more of us than took care of us, really, right up until the moment she died. But, you know, my grandmother was the leader of my family from day one until the day she passed away. You know, and I agree with you. I see this. I see that we've changed in America. But do you think there's anything that's in particular has caused that? Or has this been the way it always has been? And my case is just unusual.
Well, Karen, before you answer, let me jump in. And I want to suggest that I think it might be cultural.
Exactly.
In America.
That's exactly.
Because, Michael, you had more of an ethnic surrounding growing up, did you not?
Yeah, my grandmother was a crazy Italian woman.
Yeah, that was my guess. Yes.
Yeah, if that's what you mean, yeah. And I'll tell you a great quick story. We took her. There was a brand new place, which I'm sure that Karen's familiar with, called Leisure World.
Yes.
Here in Washington. And we took my grandmother by Leisure World because it was like a tourist attraction when it first opened. You know, it was the first kind of senior community, at least in the Washington area, and she got so upset that we took her there, she refused to get out of the car. She was like, you know, like we were gonna leave her at the curb and drive away real fast or something. It was just amazing. But my grandmother was the center of our family, and you know, and it is a cultural thing. When my mother was a full grown adult, she still didn't disobey her mother. Her mother was her mother, you know, and if her mother told her to do something at 52 years old, she did it. So,
well,
yeah.
I said cultural, Karen, is because my dad's mom, who immigrated from Europe through Ellis Island, she was almost 102 when she passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And so Michael and I are old enough to remember what it was like to celebrate our elders. Yeah. And now we just want to push them under the carpet because they've passed their prime. And what do they really have to offer us?
Right, exactly. And Michael, you had the matriarch in your family. And most families don't believe in that anymore. They don't believe in revering their seniors. They just think they're getting old and they don't have time for them. So unfortunately, that's why the number of assisted living has, oh my gosh, they're getting to be on every corner now.
True.
The need is so great. And it's they're very nice. Some of them are very nice communities, and I don't have anything against them. In fact, that was my business, was placing seniors in assisted living when the family couldn't do it because of, just think of be a full-time employee and taking care of your, let's say, hypothetically, mother in your house and your family there. But what I'm trying to get at is that the adult child now has the senior living in the house, and they have to, the adult child has to figure out how much time they have to take off of their job. Yeah, and that's very financially difficult.
So some of the advice, Karen, that you give, I think, is really practical, like tips on how to assess if your parent needs additional care, other than, you know, someone falling and breaking their hip. How do you know that maybe they need more attention, or they may need to go from their home to assisted living, or what have you? Because, Michael, you mentioned before we started the program that you've had to deal with that with a couple of members of your family.
Yeah.
And is there a rule book here, or how do you ascertain when it's appropriate?
Well, I've got six warning signs that I like to talk about, and it's the adult child observing these six items. And the first one is nutrition. Are there burnt pans, moldy food, loss of weight? You've got a problem. There's some change there. Hygiene. Are they bathing twice a week, brushing their teeth every day, and shaving when they need to? My father had lost his eyesight, so he wasn't shaving as much as he should be. And my siblings got really mad at him. And I knew exactly, but I'm a gerontologist. So the next one is toileting. Are they having trouble with their bowel or bladder, not making it to the toilet? And I always say, smell their chair. If they're living at home or with you, and then you'll start using the pull-ups and going. It also could be a urinary tract infection if they're not making it. And one of the interesting things about urinary tract infections is that the senior acts out of line. I had a client the other day that her father just came belligerent, and she had no idea. He had never acted like that before, and it was a UTI. So people need to watch for that. Dressing, can they dress on their own? Are they, can they put their outfits together? Ambulation, are they falling? Are they holding on to the wall? Are they holding on to the furniture to stay steady? And my big, if I can just put a big warning out there as far as ambulation and living in their own homes, please do me a favor and take every throw rug in the house and send them to me. I'm like, I'm going to fill my garage with them.
Well, you know.
And that's for tripping, obviously, right?
Yes, falling.
There's so many tough decisions to make when you get to this point, too. You know, an example for me is I had to put my aunt into a nursing home. There was nobody to take care of her. And she was living in a government housing project, actually, in her mid to late 80s. And she was still driving. Mm-hmm. Now, she was driving, and she had a condition which meant that which kept her from being able to lift her arms. She couldn't lift her arms. So she drove by passing the steering wheel between her fingers while her arms were at rest on her legs.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, oh, boy. She ended up in a ditch one day, and she cried to the police officer who let her go, who didn't fine her, who didn't ticket her, who didn't do it. You know, I'm sure he had a elderly mom, and he just said, oh, yeah, she got confused and let her go. We had to tow her car away, and it was a really hard thing to do, you know, because of what it was to her. It was her symbol, you know, her means of freedom, and really, you know, was a terrible thing we had to do. We had to do it behind her back and get rid of it, because somebody said to me, I said, I'm not sure I can do this. And they said, look, man, you don't want to get up and read the newspaper one morning and find out that she ran over five kids at a bus stop.
Right.
And I thought about it and I said, yeah, he's absolutely right. We're being irresponsible here if we don't stop her from driving. So we did. But those are hard choices to make.
Well, and those are very hard, difficult conversations to begin with. And if you can begin with, if you see a problem with the driving, begin having a conversation with her. And I always say, if you're going to have a difficult conversation, if you can't think of anything else to say, start the question or the conversation with, Mom, Dad, what if?
Yeah.
And then you can carry on the conversation from there. But those are the two words that I like to suggest to anybody, because it's very difficult on you, Michael, the adult child, because you're scared.
Right.
You're making those decisions that, you know, your dad taught you how to play baseball, basketball, and now the table turned. They were your parents. Now you have to be their parent.
Right. The other thing is that, Michael, in your example, is that it was the loss of her independence and probably her self-esteem.
Yes.
And then that could contribute to their decline, their demise. And so while you want to protect society, on the other hand, you don't want it to be deleterious to their health and well-being. But the bigger picture, I guess you're right, Karen, is what if you plow, you know, you get confused or whatever. And as far as the UTI, which is the urinary tract infection, I'm glad you mentioned that, Karen, because one of my friends, his mother was in a hospital and she got belligerent too. And they did a psychiatric, we call it 5150 here in California, 72-hour hold. And it turned out it was a UTI, but they thought she was losing her mind.
It happens all the time, and I think it's one of the biggest things you need to watch. And the independence that you brought up is the biggest fear of a senior in, I think, every senior, that they're going to lose their independence. They're not going to be able to drive. They're not going to be able to do what, you know, meet with their friends and go do what they want to do.
You know, another thing that I think of, Karen, around that whole issue of losing their independence is their financial independence. You know, it's so expensive. I remember with my aunt that she had some money, a nursing home wanted her because she had a little savings account, and they got to spend that down for you know, 6 months, until then they took care of her. After that, then the state intervened and paid. But it's so expensive, it's hard to believe that there are many people out there that can afford this without going on that kind of system where you know, they have a little cash, they spend it out, and then they're taken care of by the state. And that in itself, you know, feels like, you know, it feels like welfare, felt like welfare to this woman who had worked her whole life.
Isn't that? And what I speak to corporations, I always ask the attendees, how much are they bringing home in Social Security? And 99% of the people don't know. So it's really important to get a hold of their finances. And if you become a financial power of attorney, you can look at their assets and look at their debt. It's amazing. I just wrote an article on bankruptcy and how many seniors have to declare bankruptcy. It's amazing.
And is that because they can then get care that is, quote, affordable? Or is it because the care has gobbled up any assets that they had?
Well, an example for one of my clients, the senior had given her credit card to her son to do renovations around the house. And what does he do? He buys porn.
And you're kidding.
No.
Oh, dear. So
her monthly premium was $900, and she had money. So she was running out of it. And so it depends in your state. There's always a 5-year look back period for the Medicare, Medi-Cal programs. So you can't give money away, but will a bankruptcy qualify you for the Medicaid program? I called 3 lawyers here in town. I live in Denver, and they couldn't answer me.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Well, what can we do, right?
Right. Proactive. What can we do about that?
Well, Michael, you were very, very astute when you say the word spend down. And here, in order to get into an assisted living, you have to be able to pay privately for 18 to 36 months.
Yeah.
And then you can go on to the federal programs. So it's becoming even harder and harder to, it just depends on the area, but you've got to know what you find, what their finances are. And so, if,
I'm sorry, go ahead. I was going to say, how do we prepare? How do we do this before we're a part of the system that we don't have control over?
Well, I'm really glad that you brought that up, because one of my hot buttons is getting the family together and discussing it. I call it the family action plan. This is when your parents are doing fine or they're just starting to decline. Get the family together. Get somebody to do the finances and have the family figure out if they can pitch in. If they can't pitch in, then you're going to be going on the federal and state programs. You just have to stay on top of what their assets are and make sure that they are invested correctly. It is amazing how many seniors, because they have so much time on their hands, get scammed into these sweepstakes. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody will call you up, a charity, and they just keep on giving money away left and right. I had a client that had a caregiver who was not through a company. It was, just somebody from church. And the senior gave away $60,000 to her above and beyond what she was being paid. So it's really staying on top of the finances and finding out what's going out and what's coming in.
Yeah, that's I think that's critical, and I certainly have read over and over again how much seniors get taken advantage of, from the simplest things like home repairs to complicated schemes to get their money, like you say. And I don't know what we do about that from a policy standpoint. You know, maybe we have to pass some specific regulations that make it harder for people to take old people's money. I don't know. But it certainly seems to me to be an area which we have a lot of problems with these days. Let me ask you, is there anything we can do culturally? What do you find it, you know, what about these cultures that you found where people revere old people? What's the difference culturally? Is there anything you could put your finger on besides just the fact that they think more of their elders? Do elders live with their family? Yeah. You know, are retirement homes something that are very unusual in certain places? And, you know, what culturally is different?
If you look at, let me talk about the Amish, if I may. It's the entire, all generations live close or in one home, as you would find in the Spanish orientation for a culture. They all stay together, so they know what the finances are,
right,
and they will keep them till end of life. They may have hospice come in at the end, as you were saying prior to the show, Michael. You had experience with that Because that's all covered by Medicare, and if the individual is signed up with Medicare, in some of those cultures, they don't even sign up for Medicare.
Well, and that's another issue, hospice. I've got to first tell you that my experience with hospice was for my 44-year-old sister. She wasn't very old, but they were amazing people. Some of the most amazing people I've ever encountered in my life, not only because they knew how to handle so many difficult situations, but they were there and they were supportive and they understood without being told. And, you know, it's an amazing experience. And I would say to anybody out there, before we get into talking this about this, if you have the option to put an elder in the hospice rather than leave her in a him or her in a hospital, go for hospice. It's a positive experience, not only for your loved one, but for you.
And they are angels on earth.
Yeah, they really are.
Yeah.
Michael, did you have your sister go into a residential?
No. What happened with my sister is they told her she couldn't leave the hospital because she had a tumor that was growing so rapidly that they were afraid she was going to suffocate. And they said, you need to be in the hospital and you need to be sedated. And she asked me to take her home. And my sister had raised me from childhood. Mm-hmm. And I told the doctors, I said, there's no way. This is the one thing she's ever asked me to do. There's no way that I can say no. And then I said to them, is there any drug that you can administer in the hospital that we can't administer through, you know, through hospice? Or is there any treatment that you can give her that we can't give her through to hospice? And they said no. They said, no, there really isn't. It's just going to be a terrible situation. And we don't think you should take on this responsibility. But in the end, we did it. And she passed away gently in the night without any of the horror that they thought was going to come. But, you know, so we took her home and she lived in her home the last 3 months of her life.
Well, the three options I'd like to bring up is that one, if the person is in a retirement community, they can have hospice come in. They can go into the house like you had the experience, Michael, or the other one. My father just passed away last Labor Day, and he went to a residential inpatient. And it's a house with only 5 or 6 beds, and they don't last usually more than a week there because they are on the last part of their life to be accepted to go in there. But you're absolutely right. They're angels. They know not only how to take care of the patient, but also how to handle the family and have them be relaxed and have support.
Yes, they were very good at that.
And you said, Michael, that was for 3 months?
Yes, for 90 days.
Wow. Because my dad, when he was in the hospital last, the palliative care doctors came in and said, there's nothing more we can do for you. It's time for you to go home and to be under the auspices of hospice, because they were giving him 6 weeks to live. That was 4.5 years ago. So
yeah.
I saw hospice then, and then because he was still living, they said, we need to go somewhere else. So I didn't realize that they were that long in, like what Karen was referring to. I thought it was more of a, 6 weeks or less sort of situation.
Well, they didn't give her 3 months, to be honest with you. They didn't
I see.
She lasted longer than they thought she would. And
wow.
And, you know, and this is something I really want to talk to you about, Karen. One thing a doctor said to her, my sister was a lawyer, and she asked the doctor how much time she thought he thought she had. And the doctor responded, we don't like to speak in those terms. You know, we like to talk about what possible outcomes there are, how treatment, you know, but we don't like to do that. And my sister just badgered him. My sister said, look, I'm a lawyer. If you find a way to get around the question, I'll just find another way to answer it. So just be straight up with me and give me your estimate. And finally he did. And then he said to me when she left, he said, people don't want to know this. This is very unusual that she wanted to know this. So that's the question I have for you. How much of that is part of the situation we find ourselves in, that we don't like to talk about this, that we really don't want to know about it, that we tend to live in our culture like we're never going to die? We don't accept it as a part of life. How much do you think that impacts what happens at with these life issues?
We're not educated about it. And when I get a call to do family coaching, the person that calls me says, "We're in this situation. I don't know where to turn." And they start crying. So yeah. We just need to be educated more about it. And that's why I've become a national speaker after writing this book. And my thing is, I want to get into the corporations and help I work with Lockheed Martin here in Denver quite a bit, and educate the employees from the age of 45 and up, because there's early onset of Alzheimer's, there are accidents, heart attacks. It could be your brother that you need to take care of.
Right.
And you still wouldn't know. I want to get back to the point on hospice. When I said that, pardon me, my father and my uncle died last year also. And sorry. When you go into a residential building, that's when they are in their last week. And, you know, if you're overall, you can be qualified for hospice for up to 6 months, and then it has to be renewed.
Okay, that does sound familiar.
Yeah.
So she was well within that window.
Right. No. And then you were talking about palliative care, mm-hmm. and that's just comfort. That's taking care of, they can stay on their regular medications, but they are making sure that the person is very much comfortable. Now, when you go to the residential, they take you off all medication and they just give you the pain medication that you need. So,
you mentioned earlier, Karen, in the conversation about having the family, what did you call it? The family action plan?
Family action plan is getting, I'm so glad you brought that up, because it is a hot subject with me. And it's getting those individuals, and it may be the family, it may be the clergy, it may be aunts, uncles, next door neighbors, but anyone that's going to be involved with the care of the elder need to get together and decide who's going to do what. And here's a little example. I helped a family write one of these up, and the teenager, the grandchild, was supposed to be, his only responsibility to his grandmother was to mow her yard. And he would be playing video games, and he never got around to it. Well, in the family action plan, I encourage a contract to be written up. Who's going to do what? How much time are they going to spend with it? And everybody gets a copy of it, and they have to sign. So the grandmother pulls out the contract that was signed by the grandson and says, "Look here, you signed this, you get out there and you do it now."
So it's accountability, but right. It's also consensus. And do you discuss not only duties, but also financial things? Will, trust, attorneys, CPAs, that sort of stuff?
I'm really glad you brought that up, because it is another hot topic, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm passionate about everything. So, but going to an elder law attorney and getting the power of attorney for financial and medical, that may be one person, or it may be two people, two separate people, one for each. But all of that needs to be done, as well as the will and everything legal. And I have been in the industry for 30 years, and just last year did I get mine written up. So I'm very embarrassed, but that needs to be done way ahead of time. It can always be changed, but that'll give you the medical power of attorney. Will watch after the health items or risks, and then financial will be on top of the assets, debts, and so everybody has an idea, but they do have an assignment.
So did you say something about an end-of-life attorney? How did you term that phrase?
Elder law attorney.
Elder law. I've never heard that. Have you, Michael?
No, I haven't.
It's somebody who specializes in that.
And they are fabulous. I had my first will written up by a regular attorney. And then I wanted to make revisions. And I found one of my girlfriends is an elder law attorney, and she took over for me, and it was totally different. The first one was, let's get the document signed and give me the money. And the elder law attorney took me through all kinds of examples and what to do, what do you want done about this, what do you want done about that. And it really walked you through the entire process to end of life. She had many questions about, how do I want to be handled? Do I want to be cremated, buried, all that stuff? So it's all accounted for. I have it in my estate book, bright red, sitting here at the house. All of the individuals that are involved with it all know where the book is. And I want to make a warning here, and that is a lot of people keep those documents in a safety deposit box.
Yes, that's what I've heard.
Oopsie.
No one has access.
Right.
No one has access. And guess what? Legally, the bank can't give you anything if you don't have access except for the will. And it can take up to 5 years to get that box opened.
Oh my gosh. This is the biggest takeaway from our conversation so far.
It's the reason I can give you the 5 years. It's just an example. One of my dear friends was a banker, and in her bank, they ran out of boxes. So they hired the locksmith to come in and drill them out. And that's why it took 5 years for some of those families to get it. Now, you have to have that in. See, that's something that the elder law attorney would ask. Who's going to have the key, or who's going to be secondary on that? That's all taken care of. Then you can open it and take everything out and distribute it instead of waiting years and years and years.
Well, you know, I think that one other important thing that I learned was that, you know, one of the most important things that I've ever learned in life is what Albert Einstein said, that what things look like depends on where you're standing. And that's basically one of the things you have to keep in mind. For you, these may be practical decisions, but very often they're very emotional decisions for the person on the other side. And I don't know that regular attorneys are sensitive to that sort of thing. And I would think that maybe, an elder care attorney is more sensitive to the issues that surround some of the practical things that need to be done, because this is a person that, you know, understands, has to deal with their own mortality. And it's not an easy thing to deal with. I'm just starting to deal with it. You know, I'll be 64 next month. And, you know, I just had a health thing where a very minor thing turned into something that could have been very serious. And, you know, I'm out. I was in a cast for 8 months, so I didn't walk very much. I'm out walking the dog every day and feeling every muscle in my body, all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, what happened? You know, and this comes on you pretty quick, and you have to deal with it emotionally. And so, that's another thing I would say. It's a tough time for everybody.
It is a tough time for everybody. And you can always bring a professional in, to help with it. And it's also interesting how many families, although no one will admit it, are dysfunctional and they don't get along well. So when you get into these meetings, that's when the daggers start flying.
But better pre than post.
Yes.
Because, my folks are the voodoo Merlin secret people. Like, they've got to trust no one knows where it is. No one knows what's the attorney that executed it. No one knows who's the executor. We don't know Jack. So we're all going to find out when one of them passes away, which is ridiculous, I think, since we're all adults in the room. But something that we haven't touched on, Karen, and I've got to be sure must be critical, is I just got my master's degree in clinical psychology, and I'm a therapist in training. And so they keep banging the drum, self-care, self-care, self-care. And I would imagine when someone is a caregiver, that self-care probably falls aside or falls away. And is that true? And if so, what should be done?
Well, congratulations on your degree. And you're absolutely right. I'm so glad you brought it up, because it's the caregivers, the first one to get ill. Their immune system becomes weakened because they're under so much stress. And what I like to say is, do what you used to do. You know, if you have this family gathering, who's going to do what? When can I have time off? Yoga, even listening to quiet music, anything you can do to calm yourself down, and also exercise.
Well, that's another thing. You know, how about that for elders? What, I haven't seen any classes, for example, for elder exercise, and I'm a diabetic, so they encourage me. That's one of the reasons I'm out walking, and it really makes a difference in my life. When I exercise, my blood sugar is a lot lower, and I do a lot better. What can we do to orient things more? As you would think, there'd be a lot of money in this, for example, for businesses, because we're aging so rapidly in this country in terms of the baby, that big group of baby boomers that's getting older. What can we do to encourage more? Is there anything we can do to encourage more exercise, more, getting out, more being engaged, being involved? I know that there are many programs, for example, where older people tutor younger people. That's becoming popular in our community. Things like
mentoring.
That. Yeah. Like going into schools and teaching kids that have a problem reading how to read. I had a friend that started a business for temporaries, but you had to be at least 50 years old to apply to his business.
Aww.
And the reason he started it is because he retired early, and he met a lot of people that retired early and their 401ks weren't doing quite as well and blah blah blah. So what they wanted was some part-time work. They didn't want to go back and have a career, but they wanted some part-time work. And he said it was just amazing. He was hooking people from Arthur Anderson up with, like little shop owners that needed bookkeeping help a couple of days a week. He was taking somebody with 40 or 50 years experience as an accountant to help those people. And he said he couldn't get enough people, and he couldn't get enough, and there was so much work for them, they couldn't fill all the positions, because people just loved having experienced people come in and help them. And I think that'd be great to start some kind of elder job corps.
That's a fabulous idea.
Yeah, there's a few programs out there that have that ability, and one of them is the SCORE program, and that's where seniors teach small companies what their skills are. An accountant can take on a small business and do that. There are other, the Area Agency on Aging has a program that will find jobs for seniors. Getting back to the exercising, Silver Sneakers is offered by some of the insurance companies. You can go to the senior center and they have all kinds of exercise. They have all kinds of programs to do there. So there are a lot of options out there, but you know, who's going to know about all of them?
Right.
Well, in the Silver Sneakers, did you say that? Yes. That paints quite the picture in my mind. And that's the first time I've ever heard the phrase.
Oh, well, most of the rec centers have, a lot of my friends go to the program and use it. Unfortunately, I'm not quite old enough to do that.
You can wait.
Don't
for
worry,
that.
You'll yeah. get there.
And we should give you, Karen, an opportunity to talk a little bit about the book that you wrote,
yeah.
since that's gotten you some fame and fortune and awareness, obviously, yeah. for a reason.
The Caring Code, right?
Right.
It's called The Caring Code, What Boomers Need to Know About Seniors. It's 96 pages. It's fill in the blank. It'll answer the majority of questions that you have regarding your senior. And it's really worthwhile just to get your head on straight and figure out what the next step is you need to do. So I would highly recommend that. It's available on Amazon in ebook.
Well, I agree. I would tell people to go out and get the book, 96 pages. I'll tell you, it's such, when I dealt with my aunt, it was such a revelation for me, because my parents died and my grandmother, the three most important people in my life, died when I was a teenager. So I really didn't have any of these end of life issues to deal with. And then all of a sudden it was, you know, foisted upon me. And you know what? You talk about the politics. That's something, since we're a political show, that's something you really need to get out and discuss with your family, because the politics in my aunt's case was, she was the most hated member of my family. When she passed away, I was the only person at her funeral.
Oh, boy.
She was just despised, and I hated her as much as anybody in the family. But the bottom line for me was that my mother was very important to me. This was my mother's sister, and I took care of her because my mother would have wanted me to.
Nice.
You know, and I think you have to come. Well, I think you need to come to those realizations, and you need to work that stuff out with your family before it happens. Because you don't want it. You know, with all the other stress involved, you don't need that going on too at the very end.
I think it's the most honorable job or position you'll ever have in your life. So I really respect you for doing that. I know we're running out of time, but there are two more things that I'd like to mention that are relatively new programs for individuals that their adult child is taking care of them. One is an adult daycare program,
mm-hmm.
and that is if the caregiver has to go to work, they can drop them off at the adult daycare center and before work, and then pick them up after work. And they have, it's, you know, meals and activities, and they go out on trips, and it's a daily rate, but it is an option that most people do not understand are available. And some of them are also covered by the Medicaid and Medi-Cal program. And the other one is respite. Let's say that you're at your wit's end, your mother's living with you, you just need a week off, or you and your family want to go on vacation. Your loved one can go into an assisted living for 30 days, 7 days, up to 30 days. and live there in a room that's already furnished, and they get their meals and their medications and everything they need, but it's a daily rate and you're not signing any contracts that you have to stay there.
I've been encouraging my mom to try and do that because she's my dad's primary caregiver. He's been bedridden for 4 years and she won't consider it. And I was like, Mom, it would just give you a break. You could maybe even come and visit with me, or you could take a trip, or you could just sleep in all day. And she won't consider it. But I'm really glad you brought it up because I think it would be a game changer, mm-hmm. knowing that you have that to look forward to every time. If you could do it once a quarter or once a month or what have you, that there is relief and you will get, as you call it, respite.
Well, and the other thing is they get to try out the assisted living. It's amazing. Statistically, about 80% of the people that go in for respite want to stay.
Oh.
They love it.
Yeah.
Isn't that? No, we have Taboo has a question for you. Will you take a question, Karen?
Sure. Go ahead.
Go. Hi. It's really not a question. It's a statement and a thank you. I think Karen is so right. And she said something not educated about the issue, you know, and as to how we treat our elderly. And I'd like to relate it to the issue of statehood. You know, as Senator Brown, you all have worked so hard and long, it's about people just not educated. And I just want to take a moment to say today is the, I guess, what is it, 146th anniversary of the District of Columbia Organic Act of 1871, if I understand correctly.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a lot of myths. It's a lot of myth and all of that, so I don't know. But the key to it, and when Karen said that, and it was so poignant, is we just not educated about certain issues. And when we talk about the elderly, it just made me think of where we stand today with the statehood issue. And it made me think about the District of Columbia Organic Act of 1871 and how much controversy and talk is about that. So I just want to thank you, Karen, for a great job, and I look forward to your book.
Well, thank you, Taboo. Thanks, you're always Taboo. So sweet.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
So isn't that lovely? Before we end, I know we do just have a few minutes. Karen, could you speak briefly about, and this I think is a highlight, about creating a legacy with the Family Book of Memories?
Oh, I've done presentations on that for years and years and years. And it is to take when your senior is alive, sit around the Thanksgiving table and tell stories, and somebody be the secretary and write them down. And what I like to suggest is doing it. You can also do it with a recipe book. Take your mother's greatest recipes and then underneath tell the stories about your remembrances of when you got it or what it meant to you. My mother used to make donuts on Christmas Eve. We'd all eat the donuts, and then she'd serve them the next day on Christmas morning. And I used to call them the hockey pucks. So, you know, that's the type of story. You put 15 of those together, you copy them, and you give them out to everybody at Christmas time. It's a great little gift.
Well, you know, one thing that I've thought of, Karen, and I think somebody should do this as a business, is that when a few years ago, Steven Spielberg decided that he realized that most of the Holocaust survivors were dying rapidly. So he started a project where he went and he filmed hundreds of Holocaust survivors before they passed on so they could share their stories. And I say that it's so easy to do that today. It's so easy to get a film memory of somebody to how you can do it on your phone. You don't even need a movie camera anymore.
Right.
And I would encourage people to do that because there's so much wisdom out there. I've got to tell you that when I said earlier that the hospice thing was as good for me, you know, it was a positive thing for me. That's why, because my sister and I got 90 days at the end of her life to say all those things that you wish you had said to somebody when they pass on and you can't. So, yeah, I would encourage people to interact and save as many memories as they can, because that's so important, not only to the person that's passed on, but to you as well. We're out of time, guys, but
and Karen, a quick shout out to contact information, please.
Yeah, please tell us how we get a hold of you.
My website is KarenOwenLee.com, KarenOwenLee.com. And my phone number is 303-875-4466. And I do counseling, and we get together and we do the action plan. So those are things I can offer.
Can you share your number again, please?
Sure. It's 303-875-4466.
Perfect.
Karen Owen Lee, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. There's so many issues to discuss as far as this is concerned. We hope you'll come back and we can continue the discussion another time. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us tonight.
Yeah, and continued success, Karen.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's been great fun. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Us too. You're welcome,
absolutely.
Karen. And
now,
my gosh, how spot on, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And because Taboo called in and remind us that we're a show that deals with statehood, let me also say that we have a shout-out going to Sean Patrick Maloney, who is a representative from the 18th District of New York, and Carol Shea Porter, who's a Democrat from New Hampshire's 1st District. They both signed on to our statehood bill over the last 10 days.
That's
each 1291. So we're making progress. And next week, we're going to have an interesting show. So tune in.
Of course, as always, Michael.
and this, we're going to leave you tonight with a song from the Beatles that's, you know, I don't think so. And there's any more appropriate song. And this
for you.
Yeah, for me especially.
Let me guess. It's When I'm 64.
And this goes out to Karen Owen Lee and my youngster associate, Maria Sanchez. Have a nice week.
Have a great week, everybody. Thank you, Michael.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
In the capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.